Well, thank you for joining us on a Thursday evening, and welcome to Caching in the Northwest. This is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. We're going to talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the country. So while you're debating if ammo cans can be a tax deduction, we'll be caching in the Northwest.
That's right, and that means it's time to bring in our abominable snow monkey. Some say the Canadian tax code has a special category just for him. Another say he rides a motorcycle in the Canadian winter. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for letting me into your head this evening. I appreciate that, and I promise to behave myself to a certain degree. And you know what? I am, as always, delighted to be here on a Thursday evening with two of my very best friends. That would be Wits End and Chris.
Hello.
Hola.
Hola.
That's very nice. I enjoy having Thursday night with you guys, too.
Cool. Well, you know what? You know what else I like? You know what else is a favorite of mine? And that's a favorite with the extra U stuck into it because I'm Canadian. That would be our patrons who support this podcast every week. We really appreciate that, you guys. And if you want to know more about supporting this show, click the Patreon link on our cachingnw.com website.
That's right. That's good for you and you all.
I like it.
Saw a sign one time that said you, one is you. You know, I guess the three of us would be y'all. And if it's a larger group, then it's all y'all.
Mm.
So there you go.
That's important information.
Yeah. Translated right here. Caching the Northwest. Now, for tonight's show, we're not going to talk about all y'all and the use of all those such terms. We're going to talk about geocaching in the snow. We're going to share tips, advice, things to look for, and, you know, maybe some input from the chat room. Who knows? It's been known to happen. Sometimes.
Sometimes. But do we have a glow tonight?
Absolutely. Before we jump into tonight's topic of caching in the snow, we're going to go and check out the glow. And this one was submitted by Bull Cacher for a cache, Bird Watching at the Park, which is GC7GP2V. Looks like a fairly recent glow from this month, even. And it reads, "This was a fun one. The cache was immediately discovered upon arriving at Ground Zero, but unfortunately, it was very much stuck in its hiding place. I pulled and tugged some more, but no luck. Then I pulled and tugged some more, and the lock broke off the container. I'm really sorry about that. In the spirit of the cache, I decided not to sign the log until I could open the lock, which no longer locked the container. I located the naughty birdie and unlocked the lock. I signed the log and traded the two trackables that were in the cache for two other trackables that I had with me. Then I remembered something. I had in my possession a Gerber dime that I got for my birthday yesterday. Thanks to Land Monkey for the recommendation in a Caching in the Northwest podcast episode. With said Gerber dime, I was able to fix the lock on the cache, though it should probably be reinforced. I also dug out the mud a bit from around the cache so it shouldn't get stuck again. At any rate, this was a fun cache and deserves a favorite point for sure. TFTC.
Very nice. Well, congratulations on your recent birthday and getting a cool present for your birthday. And of course, Bull Cacher, thanks for listening and for sending in a glow. We really appreciate that.
Hooray. He has received a brand new shiny glow badge for his profile.
Ooh, sweet.
Call it a belated birthday gift.
There you go.
I saw
that. So, yeah, obviously he got that. And I saw that I do have a message that I haven't read yet from Bull Cacher. So I wonder if it's about getting his glow badge. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to go check that out later.
Or his Gerber dime that was so handily recommended by one Land Monkey.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, there you go. Well, folks, you know what? We really appreciated Bull Cacher sending that in. And even if it's not a glow, if there's some sort of milestone or other interesting piece of information you would like to share with us, why not call it into 253-693-TFTC and share it with the Northwest community? And you know, you can even use that voicemail tool on our website.
Please do.
You know, we've got a little bit of news. We've tried to trim down the amount of news we put in the front end of the show and put a lot of it into the after show to, you know, try and get into things a little bit quicker, but I had a couple of pieces of news we wanted to share today. because, well, in part, they really related to the theme of the show, and we just found them kind of interesting. Now, one of them I did move down into the after show, but I'm going to give you a little teaser. Some crazy news about a German geocacher who is, you know, just hanging around. So stay tuned for that in the after show.
And, you know, we have often talked about how being outside is therapeutic. Well, here's even more evidence. This one comes from mesothelioma.net. I think I got it right.
Mesothelioma.
There you go. Yes. I don't know why I hear it. I hear it almost every day on a commercial, but yet when I go to say it, the words don't come out. Cancer patients and recent survivors in remissions are often in a weakened state. Their bodies have been deeply affected by the cancer and the treatments used to slow the progression of the disease or achieve remission. While rest is important, there's also evidence that people staying active throughout their cancer treatment and those going into remission can benefit from physical activity and exercise. It's also important evidence that being outdoors is good for overall wellness and mental health. Cancer patients can get the benefits of both exercise and being outside and engaged in activities like hiking and rock climbing. Every patient should try these activities only after getting the go-ahead from their medical teams. Regardless of the type of activities, the consensus from experts say that cancer patients and cancer survivors need to get regular physical activities. For physical exercise, mental stimulation, getting outdoors, and a group activity, it's hard to beat geocaching. It's a great sport for cancer patients and survivors because it doesn't have to be very strenuous. Geocaching involves using a GPS and coordinates to find clues to find a cache or a treasure, and another participant is hidden somewhere outdoors. It's both a game and a social sport. So there you go. Mention in the news, and you know, you and I, if you're a listener to this show, you know that being outdoors can be therapeutic. And it's just good to hear it from other sources and saying that geocaching is a great way to experience the outdoors.
It's great to be active. I get most of my exercise just, you know, jumping off the handle and flying off the handle and jumping to conclusions. But
but you do it so well.
Well, you know, sometimes. You can't say it in the right order here on the podcast, but
you're clearly well-practiced anyway. All right. Well, you know, we've got another story here that really segues nicely into the theme of tonight's show. Did you guys want me to tackle this one?
Sure. Right. Why don't you?
All right. Why don't I do that? So from the Plymouth Herald in the UK, story is about an ill-equipped young woman who got lost and spent the night on Dartmoor after going geocaching in her jeans. Well, a lot of people go geocaching in their jeans, so
I do quite often.
I think there's got to be more to this story, so let's read on. The Ashburton Dartmoor search and rescue team were called out at about 3 a.m. on Tuesday morning to find the tourist from Hertfordshire,
probably,
who had got lost on the moors near South Brent. The young woman had called police at about midnight, having spent the day geocaching alone on the moors. Young tourist in her 20s got lost on Dartmoor near South Brent. Rescuers said that the woman in her 20s had been traveling without a map or compass. Well, I imagine she must have had a phone with the map on it or a GPS. But anyways, I'm just telling you what I'm reading.
One would assume.
She was eventually found hours later at the Heap of Sinners, also known as Huntingdon Barrow, on Huntington Hill. You know, that could just lead into an entirely different type of podcast there.
But exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to let that go.
Absolutely. Good choice.
Thank you. Rescuers said that the woman was found wearing fashionable clothes, including jeans.
Oh.
The rescue team said she was dressed in jeans and fashion shoes, which were totally inadequate for both the terrain and the weather conditions. When walking on Dartmoor, you need to be properly protected against the weather conditions, not rely on electronic devices to find your way, and have some spare clothing should things go wrong. They said that the clothing certainly contributed to her situation and mild hypothermia. They said she was very lucky when they found her, that her condition was deteriorating in the poor weather. So there you go. It's a little something to learn about.
Exactly. Yeah, I've now learned that jeans are fashion clothes.
Yes. I think if there's anything we're taking away from this story,
that's it.
It's that jeans are fashion clothes.
Yeah.
Well, and having the proper shirt and shoes to go with those fashion clothes means you cannot go geocaching.
Plus, I want to know about the cache at the Heap of Sinners.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and of course, the big question is, did she get an FTF or, you know?
Right? Yeah.
Did she find the cache? They don't mention that in the article.
That's true.
Clearly, this reporter had confused priorities, but...
Yeah. Clearly. I'm glad the ill-equipped woman, who she will now be described as from here on out...
Fashionably dressed, ill-equipped woman.
There you go. We don't know what time she went into the moors, but we know she came out at 5 in the morning. So she was there for quite some time without the proper clothes. I'm glad that she's okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All kidding aside, absolutely. I always like in my Twitter feed when I get the positive SAR stories.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't always end that way.
In the chat, Brylang says, Heap of Sinners may refer to a pile of dead heathen Vikings.
Hmm.
As, you know, we would know around here.
Yeah, sure. Quite possible. But, I like to let my imagination go a little wilder than that. You know what, folks? Why don't we segue into tonight's topic? And we're going to talk about geocaching, hiding and finding winter caches in the wintertime. And to start us off, we went tiptoeing through the geocaching.com blog, pulled up an article from January 2015. It's called Tips for the Coolest Geocaching at the Coldest Temperatures. And they had 10 items that I thought, you know, we can use these items as sort of a basis for us to spin off and have some conversation. Of course, we look to all of you wonderful people over here in the chat, the live chat. Hopefully you can contribute. Hi. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
you can also contribute as we run through the topics here. So, topic.
I don't know how you see the chat, because when I look at you, you're looking at the opposite side of my computer screen. No, the chat's on the other side. Yeah, there's the chat. Do you see the chat now?
That's you. Now I'm looking at you.
I don't know. Okay. My chat's down here.
Oh, well. You guys are all messed up.
I kind of feel like we're on the Brady Bunch.
That's right. Hey, there they are. They're up there.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get into these 10 tips for the coolest geocaching. That's not cool geocachers. That's, anyway.
It's cold geocachers.
First tip, as it should be, is safety first. Safety, of course, is paramount. We joke, we kid, we talk about geocaching in jeans and cold weather, but really, safety is our first priority. So, safety first. You should always tell someone, here's a good tip, where you're going. I mean, unless you want to get that FTF, then maybe leave them a note and tell them where you're going and tell them to open the note in 2 hours or something. But anyway, tell them where you're going and tell them when you plan to return. Take a friend or two with you because, you know, safety truly comes in numbers. Unless, again, of course, you're going for that FTF.
And then take no one with you. Do it alone and quickly.
Yes. Yes. Quickly is the key.
We've done shared FTFs before.
Yeah, it's all good.
Oh.
Hey, yeah, I mean, safety first can have a lot of aspects to it. We often talk about the 10 essentials, and we won't run through the list right now, but as a reminder that definitely when you're winter caching, you need to be seriously bringing the 10 essentials with you if you're doing anything more than park and grabs, because you never know how things are going to turn out on you. We did an amazing snowshoe hike this past weekend. That, you know, thanks to Dora Moore, she did all the arrangements, and a few of us joined up with her and went out on it, and it was not great conditions. It was fun, and it was a great time, awesome experience, but a lot of snow, and, you know, there was a probability that we could have gotten stuck out there. Now, there was like 10 of us in the group, so, and we weren't out that far, so human nature would say, we'll be fine, but the reality is, between Mrs. Monkey and myself in our packs, we did have the 10 essentials packed, just because you never know.
Good job.
Each of you had 5 essentials?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. We split them between us so that not one person has to carry everything.
Well, and that's a great idea. Make sure between the people going out that you have everything you need.
Exactly, yeah. Nice. As long as there's enough supplies for everybody.
Now, when you went out and did your snowshoe hike, were you wearing fashion clothes?
I was wearing geocaching clothes that I felt were somewhat fashionable. But I was not wearing the British definition of fashion clothes.
Okay. Well, then clearly you weren't podcasting, right?
No, because I had pants on.
Okay.
Speaking of having pants on.
Yes.
Our next topic is dress for success. And I think what they mean is the success as in coming home alive.
Anytime I come home alive, I call that a success.
It's a successful day today.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In your family?
How was your day? Success.
You'd have to ask them.
Okay.
All right. So what we mean is dress in layers. And here's a big thing. Dress in layers. Now, another thing that I saw pop up from Keats over in the chat, really good point, not cotton.
Yeah.
So jeans, one of the reasons jeans was raised as an example of one of the worst things to wear out caching in the moors or, you know, in the Northwest here out in the forests. Jeans, once they're wet, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's cold and you're wearing jeans and they're wet and you're cold, you're extra done.
You're done, done.
Yeah. So
done, done, done. Done.
Exactly. So as they said, dress in layers for optimal comfort. The base layer should be something that's going to wick moisture away from your body. Then you want to have an insulating layer. It'll keep you warm. And then some sort of outer shell to keep the, you know, the rain and the wet snow and such off of you as much as you can. Waterproof boots and gloves are mandatory if you're going to be digging in the snow. And, you know, last but not least, listen to mom. Wear a hat. It's cold outside.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Just for the record, that my preferred outer protective shell is a ski lodge with a cup of cocoa in a fireplace.
That works as long as you can find the cash.
Is that the insulating layer there, the fireplace and the cocoa?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Nice. That's funny.
I'm a wuss. I admit it.
So talking about hats. Now, I think folks who watch this podcast probably know I do really like my ball caps. But this time of year, when I'm out hiking, I will forego the ball cap and trade it in for a toque. Now, I'm not sure if everybody in the Northwest refers to this type of headgear as a toque. Is that just a Canadian term?
Pretty much.
Seems to be. Beanie, knit hat.
Because I know what you mean, but I don't hear the term down here.
All right.
Yeah.
So for our Canadian listeners, a toque. For everybody else,
stocking cap.
Stocking cap.
Stocking cap.
Yeah.
That's beanie. Just weird sounding.
It is. I agree.
And beanie, to me, when I hear beanie, I think of like...
Propeller?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too.
A propeller on a round hat.
Yeah.
See, growing up for me in the Midwest, they were beanies.
Hmm.
Just weird.
You put them on top of your bean, your little bean-shaped head.
Oh, and who is it? Melon. Somebody back east.
Melanies.
I just heard another term for one recently from a different podcast listening from back east. And I can't remember what the term was, but I'll think of it later.
Okay.
So
there you go. But yeah, dress in layers. Make sure that you know what? And here's an idea. And it may even have been in the chat and I missed it. But I know at least Keats, he works at MEC, which is the Canadian equivalent of REI.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, go into one of those stores. If you're not sure about layers, go into one of those stores and just ask the people there. They'll be delighted to tell you about what makes good layers. And, you know, get some input.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make the investment if you have to, if you want to. But plan ahead. Get back safe.
Yeah. You know, don't expect to wear one big coat and think, that's all I have to put on. I'm going to be safe and warm. That's not the way this works.
T-shirt, some jeans, and a big coat.
Yeah, and some fashionable shoes. Now, Keats is in the chat this evening, and he says the MEC Uplink jacket is brilliant because it packs into its own pocket. It's very packable and insulating.
There you go.
So I'm really
hoping MEC is going to consider sponsoring this podcast after tonight.
Bryling's hoping for a 99% discount to podcast listeners.
There you go.
Hmm.
All right, MEC, The ball is in your court.
So,
and if they won't step up, then we'll talk to REI.
Exactly. Now they have competition. They have to keep up.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about safety. We talked about dressing for success.
Yep.
Next, we're going to talk about going the distance. If you can walk, Land Monkey says you can snowshoe.
I do.
So get yourself a pair or rent them and learn how to put them on properly to fully enjoy your journey. Now, next episode, this is more a plug than a point, right? Next episode, we are doing snowshoe caching tips and tricks.
Absolutely. Nice.
Now, so, yeah.
I'm not familiar with MEC. I've seen the stores. I think I've been in once. I know with the REI here in Washington State, you can go in and rent a pair of snowshoes.
Yep.
And then Same bring minutes. Them back after the weekend. So you can rent them. And there are snowshoe beginner trips that REI plans. Those are not free. I think including renting of the snowshoes, they're somewhere between $80 and $120. So it's not inexpensive, but it's a beginner snowshoe trip with, I'm going to say experts, with previous snowshoers who are going to give you advice and help you enjoy your first snowshoe expedition.
There you go. Yeah, I know REI has, I'm on a mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
Where I get monthly classes, and I see snowshoe and snow winter camping tip classes on a regular basis. I think I should do that.
So up here in Canada, MEC does do the same things.
Cool. Yeah. By the way, the chat, of course, came through and reminded me that in South Carolina, a toque or a tap, it's called a toboggan.
What?
To me, that's a sled. But
it is a sled. That's crazy.
I know. I listened to a ham radio podcast, and he's in South Carolina, and he calls it a toboggan. And I thought, what? You're selling sleds? No. Yeah. So there you go.
That's crazy. All right. Well, you know, and we'll talk a lot more about snowshoeing in next week's episode. So we're kind of going to gloss over it for this episode. But just as a reminder, you know, it's fairly easy to get out there and do that. But I would really advise your first time snowshoeing, go with someone who's gone before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just go rent a pair and go for it. I would try and caution people from not doing that because it's not that, oh, you're going to get hurt or you're going to get lost or you're going to die. It's more, you're probably not going to enjoy it as much if you're trying to figure it out yourself. So anyways.
And that goes for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But like, it certainly applies to snowshoeing.
Exactly. All right. Moving on.
Whether you're snowshoeing, hiking, or just about anything else out there, tip number four is to know your limits. You know, it's cold out there. Duh. It's wintertime. You're going to get cold. You're going to get tired. You're probably going to get numb in certain extremities. The cold weather can make 1 mile feel like 10. It can make what you would think of nothing afternoon day hike in the summer feel like a marathon. You get tired a lot easier in the cold and in the limited daylight we've got here. It gets dark very early around here in the winter. We've got a whole lot of nighttime in the winter. Although I have to say, I've noticed that evening commute is starting to get a little lighter than it has even in just the last month or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, be at peace with turning around sooner rather than later. It can make all the difference. It can make the difference of coming home and never coming home. You can always go back another day. There's always another day to geocache. Grab that cache another time.
What? You know, no, I joke, but that's true. Know your limits. Don't go too far.
Absolutely. And exactly like you're saying, you can go a lot further in better weather than you can in the poor weather. And this time of year, as well as in the spring and the fall, but even more so in the wintertime, conditions can change on you really, really fast. So it's all good advice there.
Yeah, a little side note to that is whether it's good weather or foul weather, don't try to keep up with Land Monkey. Just don't do it.
Well, I think that depends who you are, but go.
Up and down hills, don't do it. He will try to kill you.
All right. So another thing is to remember to bring extra juice. And, you know, we talked earlier about bringing the 10 essentials, but we're talking about electrical juice here. Of course, you're going to be using a GPS or a smartphone, one or the other, because you're geocaching. So you got to bring up, you have to bring some form of backup for your battery. So is that spare batteries or an external battery pack or whatever it is for you, make sure you've got something that's fully charged as spares with you, because that cold weather, it causes batteries to drain faster than you would believe. And the older the batteries are, the faster they drain in the cold weather, mm-hmm. to the point where, you know, I've got a set of rechargeables, nickel cadmium rechargeables that should have a pretty good life on them, but they're an older set. In the summertime, we can get a fairly decent amount of time on them. In the wintertime, almost none. So it's, you know, something to be aware of.
And Dorimore brings up the point I was just going to mention. It helps to keep the batteries warm, so keep them close to your body.
Yeah,
you know, you're wearing multiple layers. Hopefully some of those layers have pockets that you can stick a battery into.
Yep, great advice.
Or just duct tape it to your chest and go on out.
That works.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's always fun to take those off.
Mm-hmm. You only have to do it once.
Good thing.
Yeah. Oh, next is bring your own pencil. Yes, you heard me right. Pencils work at any temperature, but pens can freeze up when it's cold. So make sure your efforts are worth it and that you can actually sign the log when you get there. Same with stamps. If you're depending on a stamp, that ink pad can freeze and you're not going to be able to make your mark.
That is true. And it's so sad.
What about a space pen?
Space pen. Yeah, space pen's not a bad option. The other reason that a pencil is a good idea is because even if it's not below freezing, but it's this time of year and the weather maybe gets just above freezing, but the cache has gotten wet, or the log, I should say, gotten wet, often your pen's not going to work so great.
No, that's true. Pencil can still make a mark.
Usually it can. So this time of year, bringing a pencil, really good idea.
Yeah, and if it's really sharp, you can always poke your finger and sign in blood.
That is also true. Mm-hmm. Good thinking.
I don't recommend it, but you could do it.
You could. It's been done.
It's been done. And speaking of it's been done, has the cache been done? Take a look at that cache that you're heading to. Has it been found recently? Has it been found since it turned winter and things got covered in snow and ice? There are certain caches. There are those of you out there that are going to disagree with me and insist that you can do any cache anytime. But there are caches that are just better to wait until the spring thaw to go look for them.
Yeah. That's a very good point. And I think in a couple of spots here, we're going to talk about making sure that you can find the right kind of caches. And Keats is already jumping on that topic. But before we get to that, another key point to remember is to bring the correct tools of the trade. So you'd say, what kind of tools of the trade might I need for this time of year?
Well, ski lodge, fireplace, hot cocoa.
There you go. If your wits end, those are the tools of the trade you're going to want to have. For some of the rest of us, you know, if you looked at our snowshoe caching crew this past weekend, a few of us had varying types of collapsible shovels for digging in the snow. Another good option is to have either a multi-tool or a screwdriver that you can use to pry open frozen caches without breaking them entirely. Now, of course, I want to remind you to be careful with those caches because the plastic is pretty much going to be like glass this time of year. If you were listening to the Geo Gearheads episode that Chris and I were on just earlier tonight, we talked about the freezing point of plastics. It's kind of an interesting conversation there, but
yes, it really was. I hadn't considered. I mean, you know, they're brittle, but I never thought. Well, yes, they actually do reach a freezing point.
Yeah, yeah, that was actually quite interesting. It was all about 3D printing, but of course, that is using plastics. So there you go. But again, just think about what kind of tools of the trade might make sense. You know, Three Hams has been known to carry a garden trowel with him, which is you know, small and handy, as well as a collapsible shovel. One ice pick mentioned in the chat there. That's another good option.
GeoNav Pros mentions the ice pick. Yeah. Earlier, Bounce Bounce said, bring a snowmobile.
Yeah.
Not always practical, but yeah. There you go.
So what's the freezing point of super elastic bubble plastic?
I have no idea.
One, I suppose.
Okay.
You know, next, if you're a premium member, and that's an if, but if you are a premium member, you can run a pocket query for geocaches that have the available during winter attribute. That's a little snowflake for all you little snowflakes out there. But not everybody uses the available during winter attribute. If it's there, though, then you really know that this one is meant to be found as a winter cache.
Yeah, it's, nice
yeah, it's not
going to attribute correctly.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not going to be every cache because some caches are just like urban caches are always available, but well, most of them are. So good to check those attributes.
Yeah. Now, another thing, and this is what Keats had mentioned as a hashtag FITAS, but I think we can bring it up briefly at this point, is there are snowshoe caches. And so people will use that available during winter attribute, but there's also a snowshoe attribute that people can put on their caches. Keats mentioned one in Garibaldi Provincial Park, GC2KGW2. But, you know, I know there's a few up in the North Shore Mountains as well that generally it means that it is hung from a tree in some sort of way that while you're out snowshoeing, you should be able to get at this cache.
You're not going to need to dig through the snowbank to find it, huh?
No, but, you know, that happens too.
All right. Well, speaking of freezing things, water, snow, ice, you know, you can walk on water at certain times of the year. Even us mere mortals can walk on water. And there are geocaches that can only be accessed after a lake freezes over in the winter. There's a challenge for you. Go check out one of those. I don't have any GC codes to suggest it, but they're out there.
Well, so, yes, there are caches that you can find when the water goes down as well.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about. But, you know, so Lake Keechelis and the cache there that we have found to get walked across the dry lake bed, does that lake freeze over?
I don't know. It certainly gets cold enough up there,
it would have to.
Yeah.
Or is the water drained out enough at that point and fills up with the spring thaw?
Yeah, they tend to control the level of that lake pretty much in the winter. So,
now,
so yes, it certainly could.
Yeah, the lake on the east side of the dam there, that I've seen that freeze. But I can't remember. Well, I assume it's the same lake, right? But, well, I don't know. What's on the other side of the dam? Anyway.
Spillway.
Norway? Okay.
Spillway.
Spillway. Norway.
Big lake if Norway's on the other side of it.
Paul in the chat says a trowel would suggest you're looking for a buried cache, and that's a no-no. But
buried
if you're looking
is
for
what we're talking about.
Looking for a cache buried under snow, say it's, you know, put in a spot and, you know, heavy snowfall has actually buried the cache, there's nothing wrong with using a trowel for that.
Right.
Exactly. And Wet Coaster earlier said metal detector and a thermos of hot water are tots he's seen in use in Edmonton for winter caching.
Yeah, ammo cans, very sturdy, very good. But if they freeze, that metal will, you know, basically lock with ice on it. So
don't lick it.
Oh, I've never tried. I double dog dare you.
Yeah, don't lick the ammo cans in the winter.
Pouring some hot water on there will melt that ice and allow you to open that ammo can without damaging it.
Yeah, because otherwise, if you pull and tug and pull and tug and pull and tug some more, you could break the lock right off.
I've heard such things, yes.
Yeah, it could happen.
It could happen. You know, the other thing is when you use the hot water to open the ammo can, you've definitely gotten into that for yourself and completely screwed the next person.
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm.
So just saying.
Because that water will stay in there and then freeze and form the ice and that, you know, you needed so the hot water to melt in the first place.
So then it's like a thing. If one geocacher brings hot water, everybody has to. Mm-hmm.
Or an ice pick, as GeoNav Pros keeps mentioning.
Yes.
An ice pick will just remove the ice.
There you go.
So, there you go, folks. Winter caching. It can be a lot of fun, but you have to be prepared.
You really do.
And, you know, we're telling you, you have to be prepared every season. Winter is dangerous because of hypothermia, but summer, spring, fall, they are all equally as dangerous if you're an ill-prepared hiker or geocacher.
Even if you're fashionably dressed.
Especially yes. If you're fashionably dressed with jeans and fashion shoes.
All right.
That's all I got to say about the fashion shoes. If you're an ill-prepared young woman. Next week, we've already told you, but we want to remind you, next week is that snowshoe caching episode. So much fun. After that, we're staying with the cold themes because the Winter Olympics are coming up. Do you remember that? Yeah. Is snowshoeing in the Winter Olympics? No.
No.
Is geocaching?
No.
No. Oh. But I do like the biathlon. I think that's quite an interesting combination of skiing and shooting. But we're not talking about the biathlon. We're talking about winter games and geocaching on February 8th.
But we will talk about the biathlon on February 8th.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've known certain law enforcement bomb squads to use weapons to shoot at geocaches. Never mind. Following that, in the middle of the Winter Olympics on February 15th, is Creative Cache Containers with Lazy Bones. It's always great to have a guest on the show, and that's going to be an excellent episode. You're not going to want to miss that one. Followed closely, episode 239, we're going to talk about geocaching apps. Yes, there is more than one.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I'm really looking forward to those next few shows. And, you know, we've been working really hard to book shows and topics. We've got them right through into the springtime for you folks. So there's all kinds of great stuff coming up, lots of great guests and some recurring topics. It's going to be great. So stick with us and keep listening. And, you know, those folks who not only listen but support us, thank you. That would be, of course, our faithful Denali level supporters of Team Squirrel, worldcaching.com. But of course, all of you guys who support us every month with your donations through Patreon by clicking that Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. That would be folks like Subway Mark, Dora Moore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, GeoNav Pros, Wino Seattle, AckerDoc, OBX Geek, Camp Clan, B Pendragon, Billy Robson, Kev MacD, and Bounce Bounce.
Thank you to all those patrons and all of you for joining us. And if any of you, any of them, would like to contact Mr. Landmonkey, Maybe throw out some ideas of how would you like people to contact you?
Well, you know, there's our website, landmonkey.blogspot.ca, and there was a new article went up on there this week about how to be prepared for tsunamis when you're geocaching. And of course, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope, you can follow us at landmonkeygc. Where's my finger? There it is, right there. Having trouble finding my finger. All right, so there we go. At LandMonkeyGC, just do a follow. We'd love to be able to share our adventures with you. And YouTube, LANMONKEY. And there was a brand new episode went up this week that featured my two friends who are on this podcast with me right now.
You know, I saw that notification and I've not had time to watch it yet.
I didn't see it either.
But I lived it.
Yeah, you did. You were the star.
I don't know about that. I think the mosquitoes were the star.
Well, what's the end of somebody, if a horde of mosquitoes wanted to find you?
I would not tell them where to find me.
Okay.
But if a loyal podcast listener wanted to find me, I would love to hear from them. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, geocaching.com. I am at wit's end on all of those things. It's the geocaching podcast host name with a Z in the middle. Chris of the Northwest, Where would they find you?
I have no Z in my middle.
Sucks to be you.
You know, you can find me anywhere you can find Caching NW. Go to Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You know what? Better yet, head on over to cachingnw.com/hosts and read the bios and all the links that we just mentioned.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Remember that you can be a part of the show. Call 253-693-TFTC. Leave us a comment, ask a question, or send us a malfunctioning pair of electric socks anytime of the day or night. And of course, you can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Remember that your support does help to keep quality shows coming. And if you liked this show, please click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more, because then you'll just never miss an exciting episode. Folks, this show is produced by Chris Infinar and Jay Kennedy. It's hosted by Chris J. and Jim Paulwitz. The show is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. Copy All Right, 2018 by Chris Infinar. Now, folks, stay tuned for
The After Show.
There, we did it. We're in
The After Show.
The After Show.
Wow.
This is a period of time where we bring a couple of somewhat interesting news articles. We get to interact more with our folks in the chat and just have a generally good time. You know, it would be like sitting down with us at a coffee shop and just chatting. That's what we want for the After Show. We understand if your time's limited, go ahead and go. You can stop playback of this. Go ahead and listen to the next podcast or head into work before you're officially late.
That's awesome. Hey, you know what? We gave a teaser up at the front of the show, or I gave a teaser at the front of the show to talk about a German geocacher who just wanted to hang around. So I don't know if anybody else found this story. It came across my news feed, and I had to translate it using Google Translate from German. So, you know, syntax and grammar might not be 100% here, but you'll get the point. And I'm just gonna read this story to you, and I want you to just close your eyes for a moment, unless you're driving.
Wait, I'm driving. Driving,
yeah, please don't close your eyes if you're driving. If you're driving, just listen to the dulcet tones of our voices and imagine this situation. A 37-year-old man got stuck head first in a tree in a small grove near Hummelsbüttel, Vague on Wednesday afternoon. The reason for this curious accident was that there was a geocache in the treetop. So the story goes on and explains a little bit about what geocaching is, of course. And then it says, to get to the treasure, the 37-year-old had to climb onto the tree. It happened then, apparently, the disaster, and the man remained upside down on a branch fork in the tree. So, I mean, I'm literally reading what Google translated, but you can get the point here that...
I'm guessing he probably had to reach down inside a hollow and got stuck head first. Something, maybe.
Somehow he ended up with his head stuck below his body. Fork of branches of the tree. But this gets better. An employee in the nearby nursing home finally became aware of the unlucky person and alerted the fire department. Emergency services were able to rescue him via a ladder. He did arrive at the hospital with minor injuries. And the article concludes, at the next treasure hunt, he will probably act more cautious.
Probably.
I don't know. Will he?
Some of the geocaches I've met, I wouldn't be so sure.
You know, I feel bad for the guy, but at the same time, I don't know.
Wow. Dora
Moore. Well, you can go right back to our tell people where you're going and when you'll be back and take a buddy with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Dora Moore said that nearly happened to three hams and a rose on Pit Lake.
Hmm. Oh, to which three hams and a rose responded, quiet you. sounds like a story we want to hear told. Maybe Dora Moore should call in to 253-693-TFTC and share that story.
and show us how you glow and some people upside down.
Great.
Nice.
So we had another article that came in the news that as has been mentioned in the chat a few times. It is the Signal Visiting Australia weekend this weekend.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I believe today is Australia Day. I get my days right, or is it tomorrow?
It all depends. Is it today here or today there that's Australia Day?
Well, today there.
Well, today is Wilder Penfield's 127th birthday, according to Google.
Well, of course.
And they have burnt toast.
Well, congratulations. They're not having a stroke. All right. Well, you know, as we said, it's time for Signal to visit Australia. And just in time for that, there's a new geo tour announced on the Gold Coast in Australia. Yeah. So I won't read through this entire article, but just to let you know that Curran Cove Resort on Stradbroke Island has launched a new geo tour. I'm going to completely ignore the part where they compare geocaching to Pokemon Go.
Oh, it's almost the same.
Yeah. No, it's not. Anyways, moving along.
The P word.
Yeah, because I used it in vain. All right. What have we got here? So the resort CEO of Curran Cove Island, Matt Parsons, said 25 caches have been hidden around South Stradi in a range of locations, including heritage-listed sites, which is really interesting because I'm not sure how you could put a geocache on a heritage site. But
well, we must have permission.
Yeah. So.
I like it.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat. So what else I thought was kind of cool, it said prizes will be randomly placed in the geocaches and sometime during the next year, folks, if you're listening to this, you may be a winner here. Sometime during the next year, one person will find a $3,000 prize.
Dude, now, that would pay for my trip.
Yeah, that is very cool. So yeah, I thought that was pretty neat.
We get all the patrons to band together and send the three of us down there to do a live episode from this geo tour
in the Northwest Territories, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll be northwest of something.
Exactly.
New Zealand.
I see the chat continues talking about taking buddies with you. Start Catcher says the buddy can take pictures and post on social media. Dormore says my buddy takes pics, so it'll be easier to explain to the insurance adjusters.
Nice. Well, you know, it's always good to have a friend there to save your life when you need him. All right. Well, you know, we recently talked about a new movie coming out called Solver.
I think did we?
We gave a little teaser about that in the previous episode. So if you folks have not yet heard about this puzzling new film, it's a mystery adventure film drawn from today's world of puzzles, treasure hunts, and escape rooms. It's been described as the most intriguing puzzle movie to come along in years. It's playing in a limited number of theaters across the U.S. It's planned for digital release on iTunes and Amazon on January 29th. So that's coming up soon.
Yeah.
The reason for January 29th is because apparently that is National Puzzle Day.
Huh. Oh,
how very nice.
So Monday the 29th, National Puzzle Day. So, you know, if you're going to have a puzzle solving night, that seems like a good night to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then they talk a little bit more about the film, the actors in there, some of the places that it was filmed. Here, let's jump down here. Our fans tell us they're disappointed with formulaic Hollywood filler. They're intelligent, hungry for an experience that's challenging and meaningful. They love exploring this world we created and appreciate the craft, detail, and thoughtfulness that went into the movie. Solver tells the story of Luke, a young professional whose grandfather disappears under strange circumstances. Arriving at his grandfather's remote cabin in upstate New York, he discovers a series of clues. You know, I'm not reading this in the right voice. It just occurs to me now that I should really be changing up the voice for this. What do you think?
Do you have a good movie announcer voice?
I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. Shall I give it a try?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Solver tells the story of Luke, a young professional whose grandfather disappears under strange circumstances. Arriving at his grandfather's remote cabin in upstate New York, he discovers a series of clues and puzzles each more baffling than the last. With the help of a woman from his past and an eccentric sidekick, he must unravel the puzzle before someone else gets to the dark secret it hides.
Hmm. I don't know. How was that?
That was much better. And don't we all have an eccentric sidekick?
I have two.
I think I may be that eccentric sidekick.
Yes. Look at your friend. If he's not, you are.
You are.
Look at your friend. Is he eccentric? If not, you're the eccentric sidekick.
Brilliant.
Oh, brilliant. Hey, we've got a great group in the chat with us each and every week, and we want to thank you. This group mentions things, and I want to read them. So let's start with Wino Seattle. He says he's been working on his 5,000th find for the past 3 months. Now is the time.
Nice.
Congrats.
I've been working on my 5,000th find for 12 years.
But... yeah. And you're almost halfway. No.
You're not even close. Mm.
And you're getting closer all the time. Oh, Keats Morton talks about more about the jackets. It says, if you're caching in this area of the world, Primaloft insulation is very quick drying. The uplink jacket and hoodie has this type of insulation. Down tends to absorb moisture.
It does. However, it is still does have some insulating value even when wet,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to cotton.
Yeah. Cotton, which has none, which wicks heat away from
dry
the
dry is better than wet.
So winter, spring, cotton bad. Cotton good for summer.
That's right. Iham says, it's happy Australia Day. Also, happy signal visiting down under this weekend.
Yes. Friday, January 26th is officially Australia Day.
Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow, which it is in Australia.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's already there. Then.
I think that's why I was saying that earlier, because they're a day ahead of us, right? So, all right. What else you got?
Another snowshoe cache on Mount Seymour. Got that one, GC2PRP5.
Yeah, our team found that this weekend.
Nice.
Team Finn says, if you haven't made plans for Australia Day or need a way to kick off the souvenir weekend, why not join us from 5 to 7 p.m. tomorrow night at Switched in Maple Valley?
Or I would love to go to that. I have to work tomorrow night, but I would love to be there.
That happens to be GC7FTYZ. That's
or Z.
Hmm?
Or Z for the Canadian listeners.
Or Z. Foxtrot Tango Yankee Zulu.
Correct.
I don't get to the end of the alphabet often. I had to think.
No, yeah, you don't have that practice down there.
And if you miss that event, there's another one Saturday afternoon hosted by the Camp Clan, GC7H38C in the Burien area, which is not far from SeaTac Airport for those of you that don't know the area. But then again, if you don't know the area, you wouldn't be here for the... Anyway, it's in Burien. Go check it out. GC7H38C.
And I know people who actively avoid Burien, so I'm not sure why it's there. But
well,
you're not sure why Burien's there or not sure why the event's there?
Little of both. No, there's actually an Australian restaurant, pub. I can't remember what it is. It's very well themed for the event.
Nice. Another one, Keats Morton talking about layers and the layers closest to your skin mentioned that merino wool will stay warm even when wet. And all of my hiking socks are merino wool, and I will not ever hike in anything other than merino wool now that I've been spoiled with it. It's the bestest ever.
Dormore may or may not have eaten two packages of Tim Tams in preparation for this Australia Day weekend.
I think that's a warm-up. That's called Tim Tams. Tim Tams are awesome. I don't think I had ever heard of Tim Tams before the Olympics when I was working with Australians who introduced me to Tim Tams. And then it's like suddenly I noticed them in the stores. So I don't know if they were in the stores up here before, if they're kind of introduced by the influx of Aussies that came.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Olympics. Yeah.
Interesting. Iham and both Monkey Cakes say it's at the Australian Pie Company. That's where their event is in Burien. Aussie meat pies and desserts.
Mm.
How can you go wrong?
Well, you know, there was an event up here in Vancouver that was supposed to be at an Aussie pie mobile company, like a food truck. That's the word I'm looking for. An Aussie pie food truck. But apparently the food truck's broken down.
Oh, what a shame.
It's sad.
Well, it doesn't have to move far. Just park it there and set up shop. Well,
I think the problem is they can't get it to where they would normally be. So, but the event is still going on from the last I saw.
Don't go for the Vegemite pie. It's no.
It's disappointing.
Yeah.
I'll Vegemite is an acquired taste.
I've not acquired that taste.
There you go. All right.
So like a salt shaker.
Do you come from a land down under?
Where the beer does flow and men chunder. Can you hear that thunder? I think you'd better run. Take cover.
You should write song lyrics.
You are so good. But folks, we want to thank you for listening. And until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.